好像
Okay, good morning. I will call to order the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday morning, May 10th. And first item on our agenda is the Pledge of Allegiance, but I'd ask as everybody stands, let's take just a moment. Remember our friend. All right, thank you. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, first item on our agenda is reorganization of the board due to a vacancy.
Okay, Mr. Sanders, I would move that you move to the chair of the board, and I will serve as vice chair for the remaining of the year.
Second. Discussion.
As you know, you were already vice chair and have done a good job over the last several years. I personally have chaired the Board of Supervisors numerous times in my tenure, and I have come to fully respect the leadership ability of both you and the late Mr. Toot for the work that you guys have done. And as you know, what my intentions are to step down at the end of this calendar year. I know that you will provide the same quality of leadership that you have shown up to this point in your, what is it, 6 years? You're going in your 6 year now?
6 years.
6 years of service to Story County. So I would be honored just to continue to see us continue the fine example that we've already established.
Thank you, Wayne. Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Board of Reorganization, Shelley, do we need to do anything other than that, or does that take care of it? I think
that's
you did in
that
motion.
That was in the motion.
Do we need a separate motion?
And then at later time, what we will be doing is looking at assignments and so forth and figuring out who's going to cover some of those assignments that Paul shared and so forth. So that'll come through notification to the various boards and so forth. And,
All right, next item is public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to address items on today's agenda. I've got several people wishing to speak, a couple to the confinement. And one to the research park. If it's okay with all of you, you're welcome to speak now. If it's okay with all of you, I'd have you speak while we're addressing the issue. Arden, are you okay with that?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, quick question. Did we decide to delay the conversation from Lucy on discussion of the vacancy timeline? That's listed on the agenda. Right before the public comment.
Mine's different? Okay. So let's go back to that. Well, let's do a public comment because I don't think we're going to have anybody right now. Brenda and Ron and Deb, are you guys good with holding your comments until we get to that point? Okay. So next item is a report. I saw all three, our treasurer, auditor, and recorder all here. Report from them as they move through the process to determine how to fill our vacancy.
Okay. Make sure you introduce yourself, just in case we don't know.
Okay.
Let's get it.
Good morning.
Hey, you want to pull that chair? Just pull that chair over next to Lucy.
I'm Lucy Martin. I'm the auditor. I have with me today Renee Tweet, our treasurer, and Stacey Herridge, the reporter. And it is our sad duty to be the committee to consider how to fill the vacancy on the Board of Supervisors. Because we're not a group that meets on a regular basis, we do have, and we want to make sure that all of this occurs in the public sphere, at a public meeting, and to be as transparent as possible. We did look at our calendars yesterday and decide that we shall meet on Tuesday, May 17th at 9 a.m. That will be in this room. And that is to determine whether we will choose to appoint a successor or to call for a special election. It's a procedural meeting only. And once we decide on which option to take, then we will discuss further into the meeting all the logistics that would be involved in either an appointment or a special election. I do have some dates for you. We did send out a press release yesterday. I saw that it was picked up at least in the Ames Tribune. The notice of public meeting will go in the three official newspapers on this Thursday, May 12th. So if we opt for an appointment, that is a 40-day, we have 40 days to do that following the occurrence of the vacancy. So if we go for that option, that has to that appointment has to take place no later than June 14th. That would be the 40th day. If we opt for a special election, and that's if we opt for it, not if we get petitioned for something later, because of the blackout dates associated with the primary election, the earliest practicable date that I can hold that election would be July 12th. That's if, again, if that's an option that we take.
And now, Lucy, help me with what the code says. You guys can choose to appoint or choose to have a special election. The people of Story County can always force a special election by gathering enough signatures.
Right. If we opt for the appointment and we make an appointment, then within 14 days from that appointment, we can the public can petition for a special election. That does require 10% of 3,322 signatures would be on that petition, and that would come to my office. If we do, and I know there's a lot of questions out here. I know we've all been fielding them. If we do choose to appoint a successor, then because it's a vacancy filled by an appointment, that seat would go on the November 8th general election as Board of Supervisors seat to fill a vacancy. That would be for the residue of the term. That would be a separate line item than Wayne's seat, which is also going to be up, which is a four-year term. So it would be a separate line, a separate box on the ballot that says Board of Supervisors to fill a vacancy. Some people had some questions for me, like, does this reset the terms and things like that? No. Then the Board of Supervisors race has not become a vote for two. It's a separate issue. If that happens, then under that scenario and under that what if, then because it's a partisan race, the two parties could convene a special convention to nominate a candidate to go on that vacancy seat, and that would be under the same filing guidelines that dictate the general election, and that's an August 31st deadline. And also nonpartisan candidates could do a petition, 250 signatures to go on as well. They can do that for any county race. So I just don't want people to confuse what's already on the ballot with what may be on a ballot.
Right.
Yeah.
So what anybody interested should be looking at right now, though, is the May 17th, 9 a.m. meeting where you guys will determine what process you're going to use
right.
To go for.
Yeah, and I just want to be really clear. We're not appointing anybody at that meeting. It's not a forum for people to stand up and say, I want to do this. It's merely for us to decide which option we're going to choose, which is, and if anyone wants to read the code, 69.14A. Which some of you in the audience may have already done. In addition to looking at our calendars, we also consulted with Jessica Reynolds, our assistant county attorney. I'm sorry.
First district.
Yeah, and so that our reading of the code matched hers. Mm-hmm. So, and I didn't know if you had it. Further questions for us, I'm sure.
No, I just think the important thing is just get the notification out to the public so that any right. interested parties understood the process and so forth. You know, we get a lot of questions, and sometimes I think it's it's best that, you know, we have a consistent message that goes out that kind of explains how everything will fall in place, and that's why we thank you so much for what you're sharing with us today.
Yeah. Any inquiries that we do get, we are keeping in a folder in the recorder's office, just that is public record. So, but we also request that if people have an opinion about appointment versus election, if they contact any of the three of us. Sometimes people can't come to a public meeting. Sometimes they don't feel comfortable talking, but we will share any comments received at a public meeting.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Agency reports, Salvation Army. Terry McPartland is here.
Good morning.
Hi, Terry. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for having me. I am here to give about a 6-month report. Well, it's a little bit longer. Yeah, no. I'll be quick. I've sent you actually the report, so you have that in front of you. I will go very quickly. What I want to touch on, though, first of all, is thank you for the support, the financial support. You're supporting two programs that we offer. One is the bill payer program for seniors. We have volunteers that we utilize from RSVP who go into the homes of seniors to help them make sure their bills are paid, their financial matters and record keeping are in order, to help them stay in their home a little bit longer. It helps with that long-term managed care, and so we'd like to avoid that and keep them in their homes. We have three volunteers. We also have one that actually monitors the checkbooks to make sure things are in order, as just an added security. We have volunteer hours of 159 over the past year, so that's a good thing. The people are genuinely concerned about the people that they work with and the job that they're doing. There's staff hours in that. I didn't track that. My apologies. I didn't write it down. If that's something you're interested in, I can get that information to you. But we really appreciate the support with that program. It's important to keep seniors in their environment as long as possible. And then the other service that you fund for us is our emergency disaster services. Fortunately, I can report there has not been a disaster in this report period. What we have used those funds for, though, is an event that we partnered with the Story County Coalition of Disaster Services. We work closely with the Story County Disaster Management and a lot of different agencies like the Red Cross, RSVP, and several others. And we held an event called Spring Fury on April 30th, and that was a community education opportunity for people to come talk to storm chasers from Channel 8 and a meteorologist and go around and get information on how to be prepared for disasters. And the focus was on children and also adults with disabilities. I don't have a final count on how many attended, though that information I'm certain will get to you at some point through the your county agency part of that. Other services that we offer, we have food pantry. We served 1,084 families last year or during this report time. That affected 2,761 individuals in Story County, so it's a significant number of people we've helped keep, you know, out of hunger. We also do emergency rent, mortgage, and lodging assistance, and with utilities as well. We've helped 50 families in that time period, though the next couple months we'll be serving a lot more. And we have a representative payee program where we assist people with their Social Security incomes, where we manage those funds. And currently we have 48 individuals or families that we're serving, but 44 of those are Story County residents. I wanted to also talk to you about Christmas. Last year we served We provided 245 food cards for Christmas. That was over $10,000 worth of Salvation Army dollars that assisted 187 families and 496 children. We handed out a lot of toys. It ended up being 5 or 6 toys per child, and those weren't large toys, but they were small ones, and those families probably would not have been able to offer had it not been for the support of people all over Story County. We partner with Toys for Tots and the Marines, and it's a really nice partnership we have with them. I guess one other thing I wanted to mention, too, is that we have a thrift store in Ames, and we're actually in two different silos. They sort of run on their own, and our division runs on their own, but we do mix a little bit in that we do refer people and give vouchers to people who are in crisis who need clothes or furniture, and we refer them to the thrift store. The monies that are earned through that thrift store actually support the adult rehabilitation centers, and those are free alcohol and drug services that are inpatient. And we have one of those centers in Des Moines, so I wanted to let you know about that. Do you have any questions?
No questions. Thank you very much. Right. We appreciate the Salvation
yes.
Army.
Yes, thank you so much.
Joe Quaker is out sick today, so no IRBM report. Consideration of minutes from April 26th and May 3rd.
Move approval for both the 26th and May 3rd.
Any additions, corrections, or changes? I guess I'll second. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Minutes pass. Consideration of personnel actions as listed.
Move approval as listed.
And I'll second. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda. Wayne, please add road closures 1658, 1659, 1660, and 1661. And utility permits, please add 1663 through 1668.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second. Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda passes. Public hearing items. First public hearing item is consideration of a feeding operation construction permit application and master matrix for Happy Hula Farms hog confinement expansion located in the northwest one quarter southeast one quarter section 34 Lincoln Township. Margaret. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Miss Paul being here, my gosh, he's always helpful on these matters. So he's with us in spirit.
Margaret, how about starting by, and if you have this as part of the presentation, this is the first time we've used a new process to look at this.
Yes, and I've reviewed that in one of the slides, yes. So, good morning. So, our master matrix scoring. Every year, Story County adopts a construction evaluation resolution relating to confinement feeding operation structures, allowing us to review the application using the master matrix. A county shall not score criteria on a selective basis. So, this enables Story County to add things that improve the protection of the environment to the permit. So, this time we use the new team approach. Instead of the environmental health doing the entire review, the Board of Supervisors passed a resolution requiring a team approach on the review. So the environmental health is the committee chair in the lead department, and then we also include the directors from planning and development, conservation, engineering, emergency management, assessor, planning and zoning commission, and then we have counsel from the attorney. Happy Hula Farms is the applicant, and I apologize. Let me go back here a minute. Happy Hula Farms is the applicant, the name of the farm, and the applicant is Noella Mary Texera, if I'm pronouncing that right. Noelle, sorry. So they currently have one large confinement building that houses 200, 2,480 market hogs. They're doubling that size for a total of about 5,000 market hogs. Multiplying that by a factor of 0.4 so that you compare all animals size-wise, you come up with an animal unit capacity of 1,894, and that puts them into the master matrix review category. The proposed site is about 2 miles south of Zeering, 7 miles north of Colo. It's located on 160th Street. We posted a sign in front of the site so that people can identify it as they drive by. This is taken from the application, and so the proposal shows the existing building, and then that green shape is the proposal, and then it also shows the truck turnaround, and then the well is also shown on this slide. Sort of points of interest, the closest house is 1,900 feet. Closest well is 100 feet, and that is their well that they own. And then that's about 2,000 feet to the nearest waterway. Okay, so the master matrix is a list of questions. The applicant chooses the ones they want to be considered for points. So questions 1 through 25 cover the site characteristics. So 2 through 10 are basically all distances to things like sinkholes, roads, streams, public use areas, and we agreed with all of their requests for points. And then number 12, liquid manure covered. With the building being on top of the pit, it's automatically covered. Form manure, it's concrete, truck turnaround, they do have that. Admin orders, I contacted DNR Legal, and there are no admin orders on the books for the last 5 years, ever actually. Facility size, they get 20 points for that because they're not the max, they're not above the maximum for that point category. And they do use what Accenture recommends, the wet-dry feeders. So we agree with all the points with the exception of number 23, the family farm tax. And the assessor advised me on this to give them 0 points because they do not have more than 10 acres and therefore they do not qualify for that farm tax. If they were related to the family where they are like applying the manure and that, then they would qualify as long as it was contiguous, but they're not related. So 0 points on that one. So Pinnacle withdrew this point request and came up with some other additions to get those points. Question 26 through 44, this is the second group. They cover the proposed operation and the manure management. So farms this size obviously need to submit a manure management plan, and then they update it annually. Matt Corey of our office did the map on this. So the pink stripes, that shows where the manure will be applied. And then the site itself, the confinement, is within that middle pink stripey area there. So it's very close, which is good because there's less time traveled on the road with the manure spreaders. So that's a nice feature in this plan. So there were only 5 considerations on the operations and manure management. So manure incorporation, they got 30 points. And that's an important one to have on the permit because it's same day injection or knifing it in. And so to me that means also that they will not be doing frozen applications. That's when you really get a lot of water pollution, is when it flows into the streams because it's not absorbed in the soil. So they got the 30 points for that. Distance to wells, really the only active one that's in the real mix of things is the well that they own on site. And we'll make sure that they keep the 50-foot setbacks from that to get those 10 points. distance to high quality waters, the closest one in Story County is the Skunk River, north of Ames, so they've got the setback for that. They originally submitted an emergency action plan. Emergency management reviewed that, and they thought that it was not detailed enough, so we gave them 0 points for that. And then the closure plan, 5 points. And closure means when it's all said and done, it'll all be pumped out, and you won't see a thing. That's what their plan is for closure, and following all the rules that are in effect at that time. So the one that we awarded 0 points for was the plan was too vague, and Pinnacle withdrew this point request as well. Final score, 440, and we agree with that point evaluation. Public input, very minimal this time compared to most. One phone call and one walk-in, both against the expansion because of the odor, mostly during manure application time. Okay. That ends this presentation, so now the board will have to they'll have to recommend to the DNR if they support this proposal or they do not support this proposal. And it should include all the specific reasons and any supporting documentation for the decision to recommend approval or disapproval of this application.
Sure.
So the comments that the people make here today, that will be recorded and sent down to DNR when they consider this application.
Margaret, before we open it for a public hearing and so forth, a couple points that came up. You talked about the application process under 26244, the manure management and the nighting in and same day application, but the comment was is that they would not be doing anything during frozen territory. What plans are in place to monitor whether that takes place or not?
That's a tough thing to monitor, very tough thing to monitor, without driving around the county 24/7, to be perfectly honest. We assume that they are stewards of the land and will not be doing that, and that's what we hope. I mean, certainly we do drive around, and if we see something that we're uncomfortable about, we call DNR, and then they do the enforcement.
Well, and we would go check if somebody reported to
right.
us
absolutely.
Something had happened outside the plant.
Right.
Yes,
and,
absolutely.
And another reason for going down this line of questioning is one of the more previous applications we had an agreement that you could go out at any time to inspect and see different things. Because of the nature and the location of this, was that ever a question or concern from you or the committee to do more of an on-site inspection at various times of the year?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that the last one, and that was the Chemlin farm, that was an individual agreement that we would come out, and so I would naturally have to call and ask if it would be all right. And the thing that we would be looking at is the perimeter drain to see if there's any discharge from the pit going through that, and then also possibly checking where it would reach the stream if we're having any releases from the pit that that should not be happening, you know. But.
Right. And my reason for going down that line of thinking, because there was a lot more outcry and controversy over the last one, the Chambleson one, in that agreement, to me was a good faith effort on the part of the applicant to try to address a lot of the public concern about possible runoff and contamination and things of this nature. And I think that as we continue to move through looking at construction of expansion of confinement operations, that environmental issue is always going to be
subject for certain groups to be concerned about, perhaps for anything that could get into the streams and rivers, etc. My question would be for you to discuss whether or not some type of an agreement like that would be appropriate, because it gives the public a different level of assurance that yes, they're going to try to do each and everything that they possibly can in their initial form to be good stewards of the land and so forth. Mm-hmm. So I'm not putting that as a requirement at this point, but I'm asking for you and the group to talk about, as you evaluate where this is located and so forth, whether you think that might be an understanding that you'd like to have with the applicant.
Okay. And maybe he could come up and address that.
Yeah.
I was
yeah.
looking for him. I can't spot him.
No.
Noel? Oh, there he is, right
yeah.
there.
Mm-hmm.
The one difference with this one is that because it was an existing one, they already have the discharge plumbed in already.
Right. Right.
So this one, I don't know like exactly how it gets to the creek. You know, if it goes to a drain tile, if there's a line right to the creek, or what.
And that
would be something that he
yeah.
could.
And that's part of the reason for asking that very question is because, you know, if you don't have a clear understanding of how that might be, that's always been one of the issues that we've heard over time from some of the citizens that are concerned about environmental issues.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Margaret, thank you. At this point, before I open the public hearing, did the process seem to work? I mean, was this less cumbersome? To give me your initial assessment of the process.
Well, the first time around, it was more work.
Okay.
To be perfectly honest.
Yep.
For me. Next time it'll go really smoothly.
Okay.
I think so. Yes, this is working.
Did we do a reasonable job giving you the expertise surrounding you that you needed to be able to really dig in and assess every one of the questions?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks, Martha.
Yep.
With that, I will open the public hearing. And anybody who wants to speak will be allowed to speak. But we do have a couple that have requested to speak on this issue, and we're going to start with Brenda Brink. Brenda. Brenda, you don't have on your blue shirt today.
Should have. Sorry to disappoint.
Oh, it's not.
You never disappoint, Brenda.
My name is Brenda Brink. I live 29514 U.S. Highway 69 near Huxley. I'm here today as a citizen. And I'm here today as a person who is concerned about water quality in Iowa. Now, I'm still a dietitian, registered dietitian. I spent a total of dozens of years in nursing homes. And the data is pretty clear that our water quality is not just a problem for the nitrates in Iowa and the Gulf of Mexico. Our problem is also antibiotic-resistant bacteria. So when I was working in the nursing home taking care of many elderly people, we had such a problem, and hospital staff will tell you this as well, with MRSA, which is methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, MRSA. Resistant. And there are other resistant strains of bacteria coming around. So when we have 80% of antibiotics in the United States being used for animals, that leaves really nothing for humans, because the huge amount of antibiotics being used in animals is creating superbugs like MRSA. Well, when you have an elderly person, what are they supposed to do? What are the hospital staff supposed to do to treat that? It's horrible. And I tell you, the thing that I saw that was the worst is that when a person has MRSA, They're not supposed to touch anybody. So you have an elderly person, and you have family members who want to take care of that elderly person. You have caregivers who want to take care of that elderly person. You can't touch them. That's how severe that infection is. And many times they die because of complications and also from that. MRSA is a big problem. We're not seeing any decrease in it. 80% of antibiotics are being used for animal, pretty much preventative care, because they live in confinements, crowded together, breathing the fetid smell of a manure pit with all the gases that will kill people. I'm against PFOS. That's no secret. But I'm also talking about water quality in general. Antibiotics need to be kept for people. And until this industry decides to make some changes, decides to get updated, I'm going to be suggesting a moratorium on PFOS in Iowa. As an Iowan, I feel that's my duty. And so I will recommend a moratorium, and that is my public comment on that. We have seen an increase in impaired waterways of 15% in the last 2 years. We need to take it seriously. It could be your family member. It could be my family member. I think we need to take care of Iowans. And I would hope that the Board of Supervisors takes this leadership, because you don't have to approve anything. I know you say you don't have anything you can do, but I would look for leadership, and that's what my public comment is.
Brenda, thank you.
Thank you.
Next, I have Ron and Deb Chong. Good morning. Please start by introducing yourself and giving your address.
Good morning. My name is Ron Chalmers. My wife and Deb. We live at 14868 720th Avenue, Zering, Iowa. We live about a mile north of this proposed hog confinement. In the summertime, we hear the drift coming north from the south wind. If we double this, it'll make it that much more worse in the summertime. There's no people living on this place, so they don't have to deal with the smell. If this is in your backyard, you wouldn't want it there either. That's just my opinion. And I've worked in hog farm for 3.5 years. I started a farrow to finish. I know what it's like. I know the dust and the in the buildings, how hazardous it is. So I know the situation.
Thank you, Ron.
Yeah, it's... I'm not surprised there aren't very many people here to oppose this, because it's in a very rural area. There aren't very many of us that live close to this hog confinement. One is enough, in my opinion. Very seldom in the summertime do we get to open windows now with the south breeze, which we always get south breezes in central Iowa. Two, we will always smell hog manure. And I just don't feel that we should have to. And the owners of the company will go home and open their windows every night and not have an issue. So, thank you for your
thank
time.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Is there anyone else wishing to speak to this application? Okay, seeing no one moving to the microphone, I'll close the public hearing. Jessica or Ethan, I hate if I'm putting you on the spot, but it's been suggested, Brenda suggested, that this board ought to in some way exert some authority and deal with this for the good of Iowa. And I'll commend Brenda. She is ultra passionate and ultra consistent in how she goes about it and where her passion lies. But will one of you two come up and just remind the board and the public what our role, the Board of Supervisors' role, is in all this today?
Yes, thank you. And important comments, Brenda. But the board's role in this is to simply make a recommendation to IDNR. You can base it on the score. You can base it on the public comments. But it's your role just to make recommendation. The final say is with Iowa DNR. At this stage, they've got a passing score. You've heard the public comments. Now it's your decision whether or not you recommend it to IDNR or you disapprove of the application and not recommend it. That's the limit of your authority in this circumstance.
Thank you. Wayne, I'll turn to you. Thoughts?
Okay. First of all, before I put this in the form of a motion for discussion, I've always been very consistent when I look at feeding operations. We do live in an agricultural state. That's not going to go away. The farming industry today is a lot different than what it used to be. We always hear people referencing the old days and the way that they used to farm and so forth. Those days are largely gone. People who go into agribusiness are just like, say, a Walmart or a new chain, that they, it's a profit. They're trying to maximize, their lifestyle. And obviously, we have some environmental concerns, issues. If there are nearby lakes or rivers or streams that could have major impaction on the development, I think we have taken steps in the past, in one particular indication, to voice our disapproval, and so the location of that was somewhat altered. What I'd also like to say from my standpoint is I'm very concerned and will continue to be concerned about new development, people that have never done this before. If you are already a producer, you've got an existing hog confinement operation, and you're talking about expansion, then the question is, again, location and proximity to particular water sources, and also the communities that are basically going to be impacted by this. And I see that in this particular case, and I think it's very valid for us to not dismiss the fact that one nearby resident is concerned about the summertime and the odor and things of this nature. That is obviously something that people who live in rural areas are going to have to deal with. The question is whether or not they legally are allowed by law to expand their service and their operations, and do they meet all the necessary requirements as any other business or industry would, which puts us in a difficult situation. So, Mr. Sanders, basically, based on what I've heard here and so forth, my comment is I'm going to move that we go ahead and approve the construction operations permit and then pass this on for the DNR with the comments that have basically been received here today, et cetera.
Good. And I'll second that. And for me, I try to boil this down to as black and white as possible. And the reality is 440 was required as a passing score. I feel like we've put together a great team to impartially review this. In fact, a couple items. I think when we sent it through the committee, we're disallowed where the applicant had suggested that they earn points, and our group said they did not. However, they still reached the passing score. I completely feel for Ron and Pam. I think Ron said anybody in here would not want this in their backyard. I think that's 100% true. I equally cannot find in Story County a better location than one that already has an existing confinement on it and has proven themselves to be very, very solid operators through the years. So I second your motion. Further discussion?
No, I think at some point the saturation of Story County
particularly when it comes to new confinement operations, other groups moving in, needs to always be in the back of our mind. So far, there is no measure that I'm aware of that basically say we will only allow X number of confinement operations and so forth. But I do think that the question always comes back to is whether or not you use a term. I don't like the term moratorium because that basically says that nothing is basically going to be allowed. But I do think at some point we need to evaluate, say, an out of a landlord or a tenant that is not currently living and operating that facility. At what point do we basically say Story County has reached its saturation level? And that's a judgment call. But that's always a concern for us, I think. In the future, risking, we need to always keep that thought in mind. You can comment if you like.
Or, yeah.
I've had the opportunity to do a lot of field work in Hardin County recently on helping them out. And there are way more confinements there. Oh my gosh, it's a beautiful county. And then as you go along, you know, the hillsides are just dotted with these. And that is a huge revenue stream for them. But I will say that, boy, you're hard pressed to get breath of fresh air. And I know it's the manure spreading time of the year, so that really affects the odor of the air. And I would just really hate to see Story County going that route. I don't think, I know that we're not there yet. And I think it's really important for everybody to express their concern each and every time one of these applications come in, just to let the industry know that there are so many concerns on so many levels. And, you know, I think the county is doing a good job of at least trying to look at each and every one. But there is no way right now for us to have a decision in that.
Well, and I would just say this, Margaret. I think it's completely appropriate for you and the other members of the committee that we formed to score these very, very toughly. I mean, you know, you either earn the points or you don't. I appreciate that you guys went through line by line and tried to figure out if the points were earned or if they were not, and the places that you guys felt they weren't earned, you disallowed them. Mm-hmm. I think that's the appropriate way for us to do this until and unless state law is changed.
Okay. And I will say the Master Matrix, pretty much you can get the points to pass if you, you know, I mean, it's quite doable in this county. Yep. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Margaret. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes. Next item on our agenda is an additional public hearing item. Is consideration of Resolution 1657, amending the Urban Renewal Plan. Leanne Harder.
Thank you, Shelly. I have just a few slides to run through the board before we open up for a public hearing. The item before you this morning is the discussion and consideration of resolution number 16-57. It is taking action to amend the urban renewal plan of Story County, Iowa, Story County Urban Renewal Area. Just some background. Back in March, towards the end of March, the Board of Supervisors gave direction to staff to develop a timeline and bring forward changes to the urban renewal plan to incorporate the Story County Conservation Park at the Iowa State University Research Park. Following that, early part of April and April 5th, the board took action to set up a consultation meeting with affected taxing entities. That meeting occurred on April 12th, and then following that, the taxing entities had an opportunity to provide comment back to the board by the 19th. The board did receive written comment, and from that did in turn provide written comments back to the taxing entities, and those went out on April 29th. We had up until May 3rd, a week before today's date, to get those out. We have received additional comments that I'll share at the end, following the written comments the board sent out too. I will share those when you have questions too. What I'm going to go over just kind of quickly is the overview of the amendments, and then you'll take action on resolution number 16-57, and then I'll review the next steps. Quite simply, the resolution just amends sections 2 and 5 of the urban renewal plan to, and both slides are, both sections are the same in this slide, remove references to the fire station project that was in Collins. This was kind of an oversight on my end that we had not received this. It was never funded. It was never approved project. So it's really a housekeeping item. We have the plan open, and so I wanted to take the opportunity to clean it up. Really, the major change is adding the new project, which is number 25 for the Iowa State University Research Park, the Story County Conservation Park. I will say the language that's in the draft plan is verbatim from the agreement that the board reached with Iowa State University Research Park to actually have this as part of the Phase 3 expansion plan. So that's Sections 2 and 5. Then Section 8 is the one that deals with county financial information. And thank you to Lisa Markley for making sure I have the right numbers in here. The areas identified and highlighted in yellow are those areas proposed to be amended. So our outstanding general obligation debt on the top section of the table, and then the bottom table, the proposed TIF debt to be incurred, which is $1.5 million for this particular project, or this particular phase of the project, and the existing TIF debt, which would be then $2.3 million roughly. I do want to note that the overall project is about $3.5 million. The action that you may take today will be repeated again next year around this time, as well as the following year, with similar amounts in that proposed TIF debt to be incurred. The map as well is a component of the plan that is amended to incorporate project number 25. And in the consultation meeting, there was a suggestion made that we take the legend and put it on its own page, which was a wonderful suggestion. So this is what I did. That's what's on the right-hand side, too. That's something that the board had not yet seen. Wonderful comment made to do that, because it is really difficult to read. So your next steps, action on the resolution today, and then if it is approved, we need to begin the financing process. And that is kind of where I do hand the baton off to the county attorney's office. We've set some tentative dates for public hearing on May 31st, to consider going along the lines of tax increment revenue loan agreement, and then solicitation of bids in early June, and then the public hearing again later part of June to actually approve that loan agreement and issue the bonds. So with that, I do want to share some comments that were received last week by the board. These are from Marty Chitty. And do you want me to read them all into the record?
Yes, okay. Please.
I would like to extend my appreciation of the...
Tell us who Marty Chitty is first.
Marty Chitty, thank you, is the board president of the Nevada Community School District. So he's writing on behalf of Nevada Community School District. I would like to extend my appreciation of the vision provided by Wayne Rick and yourself these past 4 years. The restructuring of this county's government was long overdue and didn't appear to be an easy task. While you may have many more things you wish to see done, I want to say thank you. The difference is both seen and unseen, but it is to the positive. The movement to insert the county's place in encouraging growth is a minimum position. Growth seems confined and sporadic, if it happens at all, throughout the county. The board's use of funds, TIF, etc., has done much good in our smaller communities. But with the courage to take on and open up the TIF zones in Story County should also entail the will to end them as well. They removed monies from both Colonesco and Nevada schools for 20-year stints and are only reimbursed by the state 90% of the dollars taken. Nevada School District is either the 9th or 11th, it changes yearly, highest TIF district in the state. I am unsure about Colonesco's standing. My fervent wish is both to see an end to each school's TIF zones made by the county after 20 years and to see the dollars raised be used toward other needs than the Iowa State ISU Research Park project. In short, please don't commit a temporary funding stream to a need of renewal by a decision made today. Some plainly shown clarity on who and how much each would be paying for the ISU project would be of help to me in understanding the scope of this project. Thanks to the board's attention to making Story County's future a brighter place. Regards, Marty Schitte, Nevada Community School Board President. And with that, I'll be glad to answer any questions.
So that one and the other one that we had received earlier from Arden, is that the only two?
To my knowledge, those are the only two right now.
Have you received any others?
I have not received any others.
Okay.
Questions for Leanne?
No, I think, Leanne, this, the process pretty much is outlined for us. I met this morning, just wanted to double check with you exactly what the action was at this time, and it's actually just to be able to consider, the adding the research to amend the plan to add the research project. As well as removing the one item that was basically listed there. So this does not actually commit us to how it's going to be financed at this point, but it just starts the process, which means that the approval of this would indicate, though, that we would be anticipating looking at TIF funding to do that. But it's my understanding that there will need to be a follow-up meeting to determine that process and so forth. So,
well, this doesn't commit the funding,
right?
But it absolutely opens the door to, so you can't use TIF funding without passing this.
Right.
You can pass this and then not use TIF funding down the road. So it's just really important that you're clear that this very clear. And we're going to hear from Arden here in just a minute, who's going to tell us exactly that. This opens the door to be able to utilize the TIF funding there. And so if that's something you're opposed to, you just soon see us shut this down. Leanne, anything else? Okay. With that, we'll open the public hearing. We have one who has requested, and of course anybody else who wishes to speak to will be able to as well, Arden Greiner. Arden, that's a bad sign when you stand up and I hear a noise like that.
It's just a light. Arden Greiner from Sherman Township. Briefly, I want to express my sympathies to Paul's family and friends. There's a lot of them in the county.
He's a good man.
As a homegrown country boy, you can always depend on him having common sense and all of our issues. So, just briefly, because we have a big audience here, county formed a TIF district of the approximately 124 wind towers in the Colonesco School District and a couple more over here.
But yeah, let's spell them all out. So all the wind towers, majority of which in Colonesco, these two big ones right here that are in the Nevada School District, and the Vetter construction site are the three revenue sources for TIF. Go ahead.
Right. And Vetter's, you spent their money blacktopping the road, I think.
Spent some money blacktopping their road, right.
And Vetter is an interesting project. They spend $160,000 a year for property tax on that facility. But anyhow, so what we're doing is we're taking the next 20 years of future income on the wind turbines, mostly in the Colonesco School District, and going to spend it on a conservation park, Story County Conservation Park, right next to ISU Research Park. In Ames. And I think that the tax receipts should stay inside the local townships where they're derived. There's been legislation introduced in the Iowa legislature to do just that this year. And long-term, TIF started in California 34 years ago and is a big contributing factor why California's in the shape we're in today, which is spending future tax money on projects, and then the taxes have to be higher and higher. There's also a caveat in this that said after Story County is going to spend $3.4 million building this park, that there's a point in there where it could be sold back to the IOC Research Park for a dollar. And I don't understand why that's in there, why it's predetermined. I think between ISU and the Ames community, I think you should be able to find other funding for this project. And I think you should remove the predetermined contractual value of reselling it back for a dollar. I've also always been concerned that this Story County Conservation Park is going to be part of their storm water runoff requirements, and they're going to pick up a lot of those costs. But in the agreement, Story County, we do pay the maintenance on that storm water runoff.
We're going to keep the park. Yeah, we're going to keep the park. Yep.
And personally, I mean, we had 6 inches of rain in December. I just spent $2,000 on one little site that washed out on my farm this year, so that could be a huge cost in the future, taking care of their stormwater runoff in their park. So those are my comments.
Yeah, and I'll just say, you know, we've got a lot of people here, and actually Arden and I are fairly entertaining from time to time when we start going back and forth. But Arden has been ultra consistent from day. I mean, I think you called me the day this came up, probably 5 years ago, and you've been steadfast in how you view this and where you view it going and what your concerns are. And so I want to compliment you on that. Clearly, you and I see things a little differently a lot of the time on some of this. But I really appreciate your consistency and the fact that you're battling for what you believe in. So thanks for your comments.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who wishes to address the board during the public hearing? All right, I'll close the public hearing. Ted, you want to come up as chair of conservation, or maybe not chair of conservation, member of the conservation board?
Ted Zesko, member of the conservation board. I'm also one of two members of the board, Dr. Jim Pease and myself, that have been assigned to this project through its planning stages and up to this point. This particular project is of great importance to both the urban and the rural communities within our county. This will become a living classroom to dealing with stormwater runoff, which Arlen just talked about, the silt that it causes, the nitrates and the phosphates that are getting into our water system. I would like to relate back. I served as eight years as mayor of the city of Ames. During that time, we formed what was called the Ames Story County Affordable Housing Alliance. It involved all of the communities of the county. They were assessed according to the proportion of their population. We did affordable house building in numerous communities within this county. Also, renovations to try to make more options available to the total citizenship of the county. The Ames taxpayers did not complain that we spent money and went out in the county in other communities. I think we always need to look at the greater picture, which is the total citizenry of the county. And this project in particular could be not only for our county, but for our entire state as we move forward in addressing the quality of water issue.
Thank you. So the hope and goal, and I'm so appreciative to Ted and Mike and Dr. Jim Pease for working so hard on this. The hope here is that we're going to build a model that puts Story County at the forefront in dealing with water quality. I mean, now we're circling all the way back to Brenda Brink's comments earlier about the dire situation that we have in water quality here in Iowa and nationwide. But it's going to allow us, as you said, to have a living classroom where we can explore the best ways to deal with some of that. And when you look at the lawsuit that's going on right now between Des Moines Water Works and three counties, I think it's in Story County's best interest to be at the forefront. Anybody else who wants to speak as part of the public hearing? Yes, sir. Steve, how are you doing today?
Good. I'm Steve Carter. I direct the Research Park, and I thought I just might make a couple of quick comments. The Research Park, for those who don't know, is kind of a unique economic development entity. Been around for nearly 30 years. And the whole idea is to take advantage of the Iowa State University as an engine for economic development, as a creator of new ideas, and then training young folks who hopefully will generate great new jobs. And over the 25 years that we've been around, we've done pretty well. So we have about 60 companies and about 1,500 people. And what's unique about Research Parks is it doesn't benefit just a particular community. It benefits Story County. It benefits the state of Iowa because of the unique nature of the companies that we have, their relationship with the university, and the kinds of folks that are attracted there. And so in thinking about that and in our discussions with the Conservation Board, we took a look at some statistics that we had developed through a survey about a year and a half ago. And out of the 1,400 folks, we found that about 50% live in Story County. And of those, a quarter live outside of Ames. So the majority live in Ames, but there's a substantial number of folks who live in all the communities around Story County.
So, and so 12.5% of the workforce at the Research Park resides in Story County, but outside of Ames. You said 25% of
correct.
The 50.
Correct. And so, so that translates into about 180 jobs. And we looked at salaries about 5 years ago. We did a survey on salaries and found the average salary to be $68,000. So that those are dollars that are earned in Ames, but they're taken back to those communities. And I think that's the nature of economic development these days. It isn't just a local activity. It is more and more a regional and statewide activity, and particularly in something as unique as a research park. There are only two in the state of Iowa. There are only about 150 in North America. So these aren't things that are going to pop up in every corner in every neighborhood. So I thought that was a little context.
I didn't answer it. I got a couple of questions, if you don't mind. In,
sure.
In real general terms, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, Steve, but talk to me about the total scope of this project that we're working on. So it's been rightly pointed out that what Story County has agreed to is to fund about $3.4 million to put in this county-owned park. We haven't agreed yet how we're paying for that, but we've agreed to do that. Tell me how that fits into the entire project that you guys are looking at and where those funds are coming from.
And I might provide a little context as to how we came to the plan that we have. As we began to run out of the ground that was the original research park, which was about 200 acres, and I would point out that the creation of the research park originally was a partnership between the university, the community of Ames, the state of Iowa, and Story County. And so when we came back, we communicated with each of those parties, but spent a lot of time talking to our tenant companies and asking them what was going to be important for them in terms of a physical environment that would help attract more companies like them, but also help them attract the talent, the young people that they were going to need for the next 10 or 15 years. And what we learned was they wanted to see a lot more amenities, that the people they were recruiting wanted convenience and they wanted access to restaurants and fitness centers and daycare and recreational opportunities. If you come through the Research Park today, you're going to see people walking, riding bikes. We learned that we had a half a dozen employees of one company who routinely ride their bikes from Ankeny and Des Moines to Ames for work each day. So in that context, we created a plan to expand 200 acres, anticipating and looking for ways to create this different kind of environment than what we have done. And we had the engineering that we had estimated that it was going to be somewhere in the area of $35 million to create that physical environment. Now, that doesn't include the buildings and some of those sorts of things. This year alone, we have generated approximately $50 million in construction. That's roads, that's sanitary extension, water extension, internet extension, stormwater management, and the city has contributed, the state of Iowa has contributed through the RISE program, the university has contributed by donation of the 100 acres that we're now in the process of expanding onto. Iowa State also secured an appropriation from the state of Iowa for a $12 million building that's going up. So between the buildings, physical improvements, this year alone, $50 million. Is that?
Yeah, absolutely. And expectation on increased employment at the Research Park as you project out what's going to happen out there, what are you guys looking at?
So based on our current density of companies and people per company and acreage, and we extend that to this 200 acres, we have come up with a plan that will allow us a more dense form of development. So we're looking at growing the Research Park from about 1,500 people, all built out, 6,000 people. So, again, if you then apply those numbers, that means something like 3,000 people, employment for 3,000 people in Ames and about 800 and some around the county outside of Ames, if those proportions are.
Sure. Thanks, Steve. Any questions for Steve Wayne?
Not for Steve, but more of a comment. It probably has more application to comment that Arden gave a little bit earlier. I just wanted to be able to hear from each of the members that wanted to speak on this particular topic. But let me put this in context. About 3 years ago, Steve and members of the Research Planning Committee reached out to Story County. I was invited to sit in on one of the earliest meetings where we laid out the scope and the design for this. And at that time, the question was, is how can Story County become engaged and be a part of the vision that was being constructed, recognizing the tremendous impact of job creation, the research component, and so forth. And while at that time it wasn't decided that a park or a trail would be ideal, but you could see from the schematic design and drawing that that was certainly something that they wanted to have, because they talked about amenities that would be there for the employees of the Research Park, and I'm going to use the term Wachovia, and bringing the total number of jobs over a long period of time. But what impressed me most was is they just didn't see this at that time as just an Ames area that only Ames citizens or residents would be able to use. And I think I may have made a quick reference to say, you know, maybe this is something that our conservation people might want to take a look at. to see if there is a partnership or an opportunity for the county to play a role. And it was not my thought at that time that, yes, the Conservation Board would want to move in taking over a park. But I think at that time I kind of mentioned that as a possibility. And what I'm proud to say at this point, Steve, is that I've sat in on a couple other meetings, and I'm sure you have also, Mr. Sanders, regarding this process. And the fact that we have members of the Conservation Board that have diligently looked at this project and looked at what it could do for the entire water quality issue, wetland mitigation, connectivity to trails, outdoor laboratory. Last evening at the board meeting, we were talking about working with ISU students' design in the design phase as a living laboratory. Now, those things to me are once in a lifetime, a very rare entity that comes up. It just so happens that this source of funding provides a mechanism for us to be able to expand countywide. I looked at our TIF situation that was set in, I think when we put it in place, we agreed that we would only use 50% of the growth so that all the taxing entities still knew that they were going to receive, you know, taxable benefits from the wind turbine. And so if we were only using 50% of those, it seemed logical for me that this is going to be beyond just one particular area. Our first project was a heavy investment in the Deering area because there was a need for water quality improvement of the Dinkins Lake area. To me, conservation stepped up to the plate. Had we not used TIF dollars there, we probably would still be in the planning and design phase right now for the Dinkins Lake area. So I see this as another opportunity for us to use a funding source for the greater benefit of all Story County. And I can respect the fact that there are differences of opinion about whether it should remain in the community by which these are there. But I'd also like to go back to Arden's comment. Senate file 2006, that was proposed. I serve on the Iowa Association of Counties Supervisors Exec Board and the ISAC Board of Directors. And I work with our lobbyists. And all along I was asking questions about this proposal and what was the likelihood that it would gain any traction and so forth. I believe a gentleman out of Southeast Iowa actually brought this to the forefront. What the general consensus is that the legislature did not want to take this issue up. The idea of using TIF dollars is a local control issue. It's left up to each local entity, board of supervisors, etc., to use this to, in their best interest, for the betterment of their particular county. And so, therefore, this didn't go anywhere. So when you reference this, please understand that it was just something that was proposed for consideration. So it has gone nowhere, and as far as I'm told, that it's more than likely not going to go anywhere, but that's not to say that in future years there will be a change in leaders or representatives, that this cannot come up and be changed at this point. So I just don't want the public to assume that the legislators is agreeing with you that these dollars should be only used in those particular taxing entities. So from that standpoint, I believe that there has been a clear case for, in my opinion, for Story County to play a very important role in management of this park area, which has tremendous economic development opportunities, outdoor recreational opportunities. The question always is this an effective use of TIF dollars? Should you use it on recreational kinds of things? Well, to me, Davis Lake is a recreational type of thing. So it's a question of where we are going to come down on whether the proper use is. And so with that, Mr. Sanders...
We need to close the public hearing first before you go any further.
Okay.
All right, and before we close the public hearing, Arden, we'll come right back to you. Before we close the public hearing, Steve, you might want to stay for this. Mike, Arden brought up the possibility of selling the park back to Iowa State for $1. Would you address that for us, please? And then, Arden, we'll have you come back up.
I certainly would hope we wouldn't do that.
Yeah, I see. Yeah.
I appreciate everyone's comments on this. And Steve, thank you for being here. Ted, thank you. Thank you for your leadership on the Conservation Board. And for Craig Myers, who is the chair of our board, that's here in the audience today. A little difficult because I, like Margaret, worked a bit with Paul on this project as well. But to address your question, you know, when we were approached with this project, we saw this as an opportunity to address many issues, from economic issues to environmental issues, social issues, etc. And it's a good opportunity that I think all of that falls right in line with what the Conservation Board is trying to achieve. You've heard this morning, you know, it's no surprise Iowa has a water quality issue. We know that. Iowa has an issue, particularly central Iowa right now, with populations expanding and people looking for more and more recreational opportunities. We know that the traditional commercial development and traditional kind of business models for employee attraction don't work anymore. We know that. And we know that getting people outside, recreating, enjoying clean air, enjoying clean water, etc., have a direct and tangible economic impact in those areas. And demonstrated this at Dakin's Lake, and it's been demonstrated with many projects throughout Iowa, including trail projects. So this particular project really gives us the opportunity to address many of those fronts. As Ted said, and very eloquently said, that this will be a living lab. We, in our initial phases of the discussion of entertaining this, we reached out to many. We reached out to the City of Ames. We reached out to, obviously, ISU and many different aspects of ISU. We reached out to the state on many different levels and had discussions about how we can manage this project to best achieve those needs that I just addressed. Economic, environmental, social, etc. And so we think we've come up with a very good, very good project that's going to achieve those needs and be a demonstration project for years to come. Well, that happens when we're involved with it. And I don't want to sound like we're the only ones that can make that happen. However, I think that the county is uniquely poised to bring those entities together and to achieve, as Wayne said, some of those benefits that that can be best achieved and most realized through the county involvement. So,
what other group in Story County manages a conservation kind of part? So I think Loris pointed out, I don't know if it's been a couple of weeks ago, suggested the possibility of putting in some kind of play field, right? His play field, as I recall, for handicapped, Miracle Field. And I pointed out to her at that time that that's not the kind of park we're talking about. We're not talking about a city park when you think of this.
We're talking about McFarland Park or Dakin's Lake. I mean, something that, that has more of that feel. Who else in Story County can do that if not Story County Conservation, Mike?
So that's a good point, and I think that's why we're at the table, because we are the ones that do that. We manage 30-some-odd parks, depends on what you want to call a park versus a wildlife area or nature area, etc., but over 3,000 acres in the county, and I feel like we do it effectively, and we've got a tremendous volunteer base and community engagement component, and so the community is behind that, and they say that routinely, time and time again. And so we're pleased to be able to do that. We're pleased to be able to be kind of an engine that can bring those entities together and those folks together to enjoy the kinds of quality of life improvements that we need. I don't think this project, the Conservation Board certainly doesn't have any intention of this being a short-term project. This is a long-term project, and I think the Conservation Board is interested in it in that extent and continuing this relationship for...
There's nothing in the agreement that says we would ever have to sell it back or do anything. It says if the county were to ever decide that we weren't going to participate,
right,
that it would revert to the university.
Right. Correct.
That's where the land's coming from.
Right.
I mean, you know...
If I could maybe just build off of what Mike said a little bit. One of the things that's been, I think, really gratifying through this entire process is, one, we've said from the outset to everybody, we can't get this done by ourselves. We're really a very small organization with very limited resources, and we would be dependent on other entities. And what I've come to appreciate, particularly with this exercise, is if left to us to come up with an idea for this conservation park, our tenants, our companies, our people want walking, biking trails. That was one of the things we identified. They wanted sustainable development. So it's not just in this park, it's also in how we're looking at the development of this land. Those were the two things we came and really started our conversation with. And the Conservation Board has opened this up to a much bigger, better vision. We would not have been capable of coming up with some of the ideas that conservation has helped us to understand aspects of this that are important for all the reasons that you mentioned. So it is their leadership that has made this a better project than it would have been. So we thank them.
Well, and I appreciate that, Steve, because I agree with you. I think you were fortunate that we have a phenomenal Conservation Board and staff here in Story County, but they bring an expertise that nobody else brings. And this project, so we get the question, well, why would the county have a county park inside a city limits? Because there's nobody else that can do this. It's not like Ames Parks and Rec, Ted, could do something like this. That's not what they're designed to do. It's an opportunity for, you know, what is ultimately going to be, well, by the time you include build out and everything else, a project that's going to be well into the hundreds of millions of dollars. It's, as I see it, appropriate for Story County to play a role in that, and more importantly, to have some control over what this is going to look like and what it's going to do. And then when you add the benefits of a close relationship with Iowa State and the ability to teach that next generation of people that are going to be dealing with water quality, I really see it as a win-win-win. Mike, anything else? We need to let Arden come back up and address. Okay.
Thanks.
Steve, thanks.
Thank you.
Arden?
Well, just briefly, first of all, with all the thanks going around, nobody ever seems to thank the taxpayers that end up paying for all this. They might look out for it.
You're the only one looking out for the taxpayers, Arden.
Okay. But they never thank them. I never hear the thanks. I was at the Ames Research Park, the Center of Law and Ag Taxation, Robert McGowan. But anyhow, I noticed an awful lot of vacant space in the research park, vacant rooms and offices. I just wanted to ask Steve, of the current
Research Park, what is the occupancy rate?
Steve, do you have that off the top of your head?
Today, it'd be probably 90%.
Okay, I just noticed there's, I think, the center of ag was going to, and law and taxation was going to move out, weren't they?
We'd have people moving in and out.
I just noticed.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, I'll close the public hearing and turn to the board for action. Wayne?
I would move approval of Resolution 1657, which amends the urban renewal plan and which would then direct staff to have discussions and meetings regarding the county financial involvement in this as we move forward.
Yeah, I'll second it. And I want to say a couple things as I second it. First of all, Paul Tu was an absolute fan of this project. I mean, you go back and you look at the minutes of these things. What he was highly concerned about, and rightly highly concerned, was it going to be appropriate to utilize this funding mechanism, TIF, in order to build this park. I mean, Paul's been right there all the way through in terms of this park is the right thing to do, it's the right thing for conservation to take on. He has not been steadfastly there that TIF dollars were the right thing, right mechanism to use. I think it's important to point out, quite frankly, as I sit here today, I don't have any idea where our friend Paul Tu would have come down on this. I'll tell you where I come down. And that is irrespective of where my friend Paul Tu would have come down. It's a slippery slope if we ever start to draw lines within Story County. Story County is Story County. The three of us are elected to serve all of Story County and serve the taxpayers and utilize their dollars in the best way possible. This board balanced the budget for the first time in 25 years, cut $6 million in actual spending, has increased our ending fund balance from projected $6 million to about $12 million now. This board has been demonstrably ultra responsible with taxpayer dollars. I come to work every day to serve the taxpayers of Story County, and this idea that they're not thought of or not appreciated is ludicrous. Second thing I'll say is if we start to draw lines within Story County and say, oh, these dollars come from this area of the county and so they better only be utilized there, you better be really, really careful about that, because the reality is here in Story County, Wayne, we have about $7 billion of taxable valuation in Story County, roughly $7 billion. $5 billion of that plus comes from the one-third of the county that is west of I-35. And less than $2 billion of that $7 billion in valuation comes from the two-thirds of the county that we're sitting in right now. And so if we ever start to draw lines and say, oh, we're only going to spend dollars where they come from, our county's going to be in tough shape because we're going to have haves and have-nots within the county. The reality is, if it's good for Story County, and I don't care if it happens in Ziering or Ames or anywhere else, if it's good for the county, it's good for the county. And Steve started talking about numbers. Can you imagine 800 new residents in Story County that don't live in Ames? What that does for our school districts? You want to help our school districts who are already getting 90% of the funding that comes out because of TIF backfilled? You want to help them? Let's get some additional kids in their school systems. That helps them. But most importantly, it's an opportunity for Story County to be a leader, to be a participant in what is a great project, not only for Story County, but all of Central Iowa, be a leader in water quality issues and how we're going to deal with that in the long term. And I believe there's no other appropriate mechanism to pay for this than utilizing TIF. It was one of those conversations that I had circled on the calendar because I knew that Paul Tu and I were going to have this conversation as we went through. And I was going to make the case, and he was going to do what he did all the way through. You talk about a guy with common sense and a guy who could see the big picture, and he was highly concerned, and it would have been really interesting to get his take on all of this. But I want to make sure that we lay out that he was worried about whether this was the appropriate way to do it. I think it is. Leanne, close us out.
So again, today your action is on resolution number 16-57, And as was said, that just sets the frame, that amends the plan to incorporate the Iowa State Research Park as a project. And then the tax, the financing mechanism will come over the next month and a half.
So there's still an opportunity if we go ahead and pass this that we may not use TIF funding.
Right.
But this very clearly opens the door that that's where we're headed.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Okay. Further discussion.
That's my understanding.
Mm-hmm. Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It passes. We're going to take a 3-minute recess and then we'll come back and finish off our agenda. Sheriff, would you be willing to say first law enforcement
officer at 9:30?
Oh, yeah.
You speak first, I'll speak second. Sheriff Fitzgerald will wrap it up.
Okay.
Just quit.
Right, real quick.
Appropriate.
But I told him you'd be willing.
Sure. Yeah. Yes, please.
Yes.
Will you announce that?
Yeah, I'm going to do it on announcements.
Right.
I'm going to make sure Austin gets it fully.
Good.
All right, I'm going to call us back into session. I don't know that I needed the hammer, but I like the hammer. Consideration of Resolution 1663, approving and authorizing loan agreement with Zion Bank, Salt Lake City, Utah, as a lender and providing for the issuance of a $2.430 million general obligation refinancing bond. Lucy Martin.
Yes, okay. We've been meeting several times through the spring to discuss refinancing our callable bonds. We looked at both traditional placement for those and the board opted for a private placement. So this resolution is just to authorize the sale and issuance of those bonds. That decision has been made in the past. I think we made that decision on April 12th. We, the county, you, the board, did that. And this resolution has been prepared by our bond council.
Remind me what we're saving the taxpayers of Story County by refinancing.
Approximately $73,000 by refinancing the 2008 and 2009 callable bonds.
Wayne, questions?
No, not.
Why did we go with a bank out of Utah instead of a bank in Iowa?
We tried to do a private placement locally. Piper Jaffray looked into that for us, and there was just simply no appetite for that in the local banks. That's not an instrument that they are interested in at this point in time. So we did get an interest from Zion's Bank out of Salt Lake City, and the board decided to go with that.
So we tried to do it locally, couldn't do it, still saving the taxpayer $73,000.
Absolutely.
All right. Wayne?
I would move Resolution 1653 approving and authorizing the loan agreement with Zion Bank, Salt Lake City, for the issuing of a $2,430,000 general obligation refunding bond.
Second. Further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Lucy, thanks for your work on this.
Thank you so much.
Next item is consideration of sending FY16 final budget amendment to the county newspapers for publication. Thanks, Leanne. Lisa Marco.
Yep, it's still morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Lisa, how are you doing today?
Living the dream, dude. Living the dream. What you have in front of you is the documentation for the budget amendment that we're proposing. It's going to go to the paper for publication so that we can have a public hearing on May 31st to amend this. I held off as long as I possibly could for all the miscellaneous items that are being, you know, brought up and or needed money for. Overall, the revenues are going up 7.9% from the last amended budget in September, and expenses are going up 9.8% from the last amended budget in September. The bond refinancing that you just finalized increases revenue. The dollar amount is 2.4,
yep,
and expense is 2.4.
So we've got an additional 2.4 coming in and an additional 2.4
right,
going out.
Right. The animal control building purchase is included in here. In speaking with Ethan recently, we're not totally positive that's going to happen by the end of the fiscal year, but we're trying. So we need to have the money in there in case it does. And the mental health regional payment
is which was more than we had budgeted.
Right, we budgeted 2. It's going to be closer to 3.4.
But those are dollars that are in our reserve fund and moving to the region.
Yeah, they're not going to be in our ending fund balance anymore. They're going to be in the they're going to be spent. The documentation that you were provided gives you each department's revenues and expenses that I'm looking to amend. There were very few requests, actually. A couple of departments made specific requests to the amendment, but the majority of the amendment is for pay and pay-related items. When we originally budgeted and when we amended, we did not appropriate. We did not budget the entire 100% of what we thought they were going to spend. We were trying to budget closer to actual. So this should take care of giving everybody enough money to get through the end of the fiscal year. Ending fund balances with this amendment. Our general fund will be about 27%. Supplemental will be about 32%. Mental health fund will be down to 0.5%, which is where they want us to be.
Yep.
17% for the rural fund and about 36% for secondary roads fund.
And secondary roads, we're going to take care of some of that with what we have budgeted for next year.
For next year.
Right.
So really solid in terms of percentages all the way across.
Very solid, yes.
Okay.
Yes. So basically what I wanted to do is bring you the information so you could ask me questions and know that the public hearing is going to be scheduled then for May 31st. You can lower at that public hearing, but you cannot raise what I put in here.
Mm-hmm. Wayne, anything?
No. I would just move the FY 16 final budget amendment for our publication. Do I need to include in that motion the fact that the 531st will be the
public hearing?
You just did, and I second.
Okay.
Second. Further discussion. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Lisa, thank you. Discussion and consideration of the Crestview Mobile Home Park. Members of our treasurer's office. Old one.
Hi again.
Hi.
Well,
appreciate you coming in to talk to us about this. This has been an interesting issue. Remains an interesting issue.
It does. I know neither one of you are probably 100% up to speed because we've been dealing through Paul. And I talked to him last Wednesday afternoon, and he thought it would be best I bring questions to the board this week before this afternoon is a public meeting with the residents of Crestview at 4:30.
Super.
Which is fine, but I have some questions I know they're going to be asking me, and I don't have the right answers.
Let's try to get there.
Well, there's 62 units out there.
31 of them, as I recall from last week, actually have residents in them.
Correct.
Okay.
Logical guess, there's probably 5 or 6 that do hold a clear title to their trailer. And if they have the ways and means, or if the trailer is movable, we'll have the option to move that trailer out, assuming that the taxes are paid
right. And
they come in and get a tax clearance.
Mm-hmm.
We currently have a little over 54,000 of outstanding taxes sitting on that mobile home park.
Would you believe me if I said I was shocked? Would you? No?
No.
Okay.
So because that's private information between the renter and grant, if they come in with their document saying they are renting to own but don't have the title, as a board, how far are you going to go to abate taxes? I guess that's the question. Because there's trailers that are empty that have taxes due on them. There's trailers that are occupied that have taxes due on them. Not sure who has the title, per se.
Yep.
And so
these are unusual circumstances, and at the end of the day, we have to look at, you know, the individual people's ability
to meet the financial obligations that is outstanding or against them. But I would assume, and I think as you rightly are raising, is that there could obviously be some that are going to be in a very difficult position to come up with the necessary documentation or to be able to come up with the taxes that are owed. And so the question basically is, since we are trying to establish some type of assistance for our relocation and no fault of theirs, how far do we go?
Yes.
And my feeling is we exhaust all avenues possible for collection to the point that is feasible, and then we rely on a recommendation again coming back from you guys like you've done for other municipalities or government entities that talk about a request for abatement.
Okay, so...
Now, how is that different?
No, that's understandable. I know what you're saying. If, you know, you've offered X amount of funds per family...
$1,000 per occupied unit.
Are
up
they,
to $1,000.
Are they eligible, unfortunately, to... It's a vicious circle. Can they use those funds to perhaps pay off their current taxes that are delinquent and move their trailer? Or is that just for...
So the $1,000 that we approved not per person, that's per occupied unit. That $1,000 that we approved was in order to assist, along with other funds that are available out there, that was in order to assist with relocation.
Right. Only.
Okay.
That's what we approved.
Right.
Not to say that we don't need to talk about that some more, but for me, Renee, it's two separate issues. I mean, you're doing exactly what a great treasurer does, and we're lucky to have you, in thinking about, okay, we got these taxes outstanding. We sure can't let any of the trailers leave while we've got taxes outstanding on them. I get that. That's not my concern right now. My concern is we've got residents living out there that have water that's unusable, right? See Flint, Michigan, if you want to know if that's a big deal.
I know.
I want to make, and these are people who are living in a place of last resort. It's not like you're living out there if you get anywhere else to go. I want to do everything we can to assist those people with moving on. And to me, that's separate from what happens with trailers. Trailers can't leave until we figure out what's going on with taxes, but we can sure as heck get the people out of there. So I would be opposed to utilizing any of those dollars to take care of the back taxes. I want those dollars utilized to assist them with moving to somewhere else, and then we're going to come back and we're going to worry about what's happening with the taxes on those trailers. I mean, Ethan's going to spend months and months and months on Crestview trying to unwind this whole thing. And one thing I said last week that I'll say again today, I want to make sure that at the end of the day, however this thing goes, that we try to keep the taxpayers of Story County as whole as possible, and if that means putting a lien on the property, whatever that means, we're going to count on Ethan to unwind that. But I don't want getting these people moved to be wound up at all in what's going on with those in what's owed on those trailers. So hopefully that helps you with answering some of those questions.
Just another question that came to mind, after or if we get down to the 14 trailers plus the house, is there any way as a county we can monitor that situation to make sure he's not...
Well, so that falls to the Board of Health.
Okay.
And Margaret and the Board of Health...
Do it.
Paul was the chair of the Board of Health, so he was involved in this, you know, intimately all the way through. But assuming it gets down to 14 trailers, that does not alleviate the responsibility for the water to be in good shape and be monitored. It just means that instead of DNR being responsible, the county becomes responsible. Margaret, if I'm misstating any of this, then the county becomes responsible. And I'll tell you this, and I believe that I'm going to be the member now serving on the Board of Health in lieu of having another supervisor on board. I'm going to be opposed to having anybody living somewhere, be it 14 or 30 or however many, where the water is not sufficient.
So I don't think that magic number of getting down to 14 automatically means that everything goes away. It just means that it falls to the County Board of Health rather than state DNR. And we're going to have to see what happens. My first priority is make sure that those that have, I think, eviction notices have been served to get down to the 14. But those that have the eviction notices, and frankly, anybody else, the ones that haven't gotten the eviction notices who want to move on, I want to assist them however we can, up to the limits we put on it, to go ahead and move on.
If there is a need for more financial assistance, is the board willing to extend that amount?
I don't feel comfortable answering that question by at this point because we don't have all the.
So what we've done to this point, right? What we've done to this point is we have freed up Carla and her staff in community services to not have to jump through all the hoops that they normally have to jump through to offer assistance. The $1,000 in my mind is not a limit; it's an addition. So. In addition to the $1,000 that Story County is putting out there, they also have access to dollars in many other areas that we've now cleaned up the red tape that maybe they can access a little more simply. And for sure, the $1,000 they can access as simply as possible just to try to get them moved on into more suitable living arrangements.
You can do this if you want to.
You might need to get a little closer so I can get you.
The thousand, there are other community agencies that people may be able to access, which would be in addition to the thousand that we would be looking to provide.
And your staff is going to facilitate some of those contacts.
Correct, yep. And we've got information on all of those agencies available, as well as CIRHA has a deposit assistance program that we will provide information to folks for. And Citibank also has a deposit and first month's rent program. So, yeah, we've got all that information.
Yeah, so Renee, we're going to try to access all of those dollars we can, plus the $1,000. I don't see Story County as having the ability to go beyond that $1,000 per unit. That we have out there. That said, I also don't expect that those are the last dollars that Story County is going to spend because we're going to have some additional responsibilities. It's just not going to be in the relocation process.
Good questions. Other questions?
Okay. I think that's it.
Does that do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tonight.
All right. Yeah.
So I guess my other question is, this is mostly for the residents, so there's no need for either of us to be present at, from your standpoint.
I don't believe so. I'm going to tell them, you know, those that do own their trailer, how to proceed to get it out of there. That's what they choose to do.
Great.
I believe I told Deb Shildroth, I think there's one or two veterans, so Brett can probably have additional assistance for them.
Great.
And the rest.
Well, thank you so much for your assistance in this.
I hope you didn't feel bad.
Thanks.
Yep. Discussion consideration of Cigna Group insurance renewal for life, accident, and disability benefits. Alicia Wignall.
Good morning.
Hi, Darren.
This is our last piece of our renewals for our upcoming fiscal year benefits for our employees. Cigna Life Insurance is our carrier that we have for short-term, long-term disability and also our life and accident insurance. About 3 years ago, we switched over to Cigna from Dearborn Life. At that point, we were looking at, we had significant premium savings between Dearborn Life Insurance and Cigna. I got the renewal back for our benefits and also requested an ASO quote or a self-insured quote for the short-term disability piece of those benefits. So that's what you see in front of you. Our renewals, they did not increase any of our premiums. They haven't increased any of those premiums in the 3 years that we've been with Cigna. That's a great benefit for our employees. The other piece is the self-insuring quote. We do have a reasonable quote. It's $1.58 per employee per month. to pay for that self-insurance piece. This would have them, they would still do all of the work that they've done. They would make the determination as far as if benefits are approved. They do all the tax reporting. They cut the checks for the disability.
We'd just be funding
it. We would just be funding it. It's a little more, you know, oversight on our part as far as seeing what the claims are and doing different things, but they would still make that determination as far as whether that employee would qualify for short-term disability. The benefits are all the same, so the employees, nothing's changed on the benefit design on any of this insurance for them. Looking, I did go back about 5.5 years and kind of did an analysis on what we paid in premiums versus claims. In about a 5.5 year period, the difference between claims and premiums was almost $90,000. Now, take in mind, we will still have to pay the $400 per month for our employees to get to have the self to be self insured.
So we pay $5,000 in order to get $90,000 back.
Yeah,
sounds like a pretty good deal.
So overall, it makes sense to self insure this piece. I also took a look at what our current employee base has as far as sick leave. Short-term covers 13 weeks. So if I look at sick leave balances, over 50% of our employee population has more than 13 weeks of sick leave on the books. So the risk is not there. You may have a year. I think fiscal year 15 was our largest year for claims. But if you look at an overall five-year span, it does make sense to self-insure this piece.
And we've got enough in reserve to be able to cover it.
We have that. And then what we'll do is we'll to keep that reserve is we still figure out what the premium is per employee and charge that. It's 100% employer provided, so it's just a financial piece that we do in order to get that money over into our reserve.
Question, Wayne?
No.
Okay.
I appreciate you giving those the information to me and going through that. So. Mm-hmm. So what we have is a consideration of approval of the Cigna Group Insurance renewal for life accidents disability benefit, which involves self-insuring. Jeffrey.
Second. Further discussion. Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Thanks, Alyssa.
Thanks.
Next item is discussion and consideration of the recommendation to merge case management services with Boone County. Deb, Carl, and Aaron.
Three Musketeers. You're going to make one to the hot
guy. I know.
Good morning, board.
Good morning.
Good
afternoon.
All right, so this is an update from a meeting that we had with you a couple of weeks ago on the potential case management merger with Boone County. At that meeting, the board directed staff to proceed with conversing with Boone County to see what this structure might look like and how best to proceed. We have since found out that one rather than two of the managed care organizations would be contracting with existing case management units. And we would need to go under one Medicaid number and use that particular rate associated with that Medicaid number in order to bill for services. And what would make sense in this scenario would be that we use Boone County's Medicaid number and their rate and surrender the Story County number and rate. We also looked at, based on those financials, we determined that with the current number of case management clients, we would need to have four case managers serve Story County clients. We met with Lisa Markley and Alyssa to address the personnel expenses of the four staff. And by using the Boone County reimbursement rate, which is $87.49 per 15-minute unit, this would meet our expenses and then some. Though we probably would need to purchase supervision coverage through the Boone County staff. But Boone County said that would need to be worked out through the 20E agreement and the governing board for that particular agreement. We also met with Ethan, Alyssa, and the Boone County rep to review risk. Are we going to have individual risk or shared risk in this agreement? And then what would the membership of that 20E board look like? So the next step would be to draft a 2080 agreement, and Ethan had started working on that on behalf of the counties. But we would like to address the potential merger with existing case management staff to gauge what the interest is in moving in this direction. Would we have enough staff to pursue it? And I would like Carla and Aaron to talk a little bit about that so we know what our next step would be.
We have arranged a meeting later this week to meet with the current staff to find out from them, are they interested in continuing to work for Story County in this capacity. We do believe there are some folks that are looking at some other employment opportunities, so we just kind of want to see where they're at with all of this. The structure would look different than how our program is currently operated, and so that would mean a big change for some of them as well.
I don't have anything to add. You covered.
Yeah, so for me, and you guys just help me if I'm missing something here. So I've been really interested in this conversation, and it made a lot of sense to me because of Boone's model of, as I understand it, charging more and then returning some dollars at the end of the year. It made some sense to me if it meant that we could maintain some of our existing staff. But there is a risk there. There's a risk that the numbers aren't going to equal out. I mean, Deb, we've seen that firsthand where, you know, we've tried to have things be awash and it never quite works out like you want it to. And so for me, that line of being interested only applies up to keeping our existing staff. If it means creating this and then having to go hire new staff, I stop being interested real quickly, because I think we're putting Story County on the hook for something that we need not put on the hook. Because as I understand it, these managed care organizations are going to be responsible for providing services to the people of Story County, whether it comes through our staff or Boone staff or however they do it. So I don't see the advantage if our existing staff is not interested in continuing with their current jobs, albeit in a little different structure. Am I seeing that right, or am I missing something?
I think you are, and I believe that was part of the conversation I had with Carla yesterday, and what role then the regions basically would play in this scenario, in the event that, because the whole change in case managers was not something that we orchestrated or desired, but this was passed down to us by the state and so forth, and yet the regions are the ones that's going to play a key role. But I agree with you in terms of our own staffing and whether or not there's going to, would there be other duties that some would be able to assume that may not be necessarily in the case management, but the concern is, again, their location. It would appear on the surface that the clients in Story County is still going to need to be served by our personnel. And while the oversight is primarily now going to be in Boone County, I was not excited about the fact that our staff then would have to be going to Boone every day, in order to deal with the Story County clients. And Carla kind of assured me from her understanding that more than likely would not be the basic case. But you're saying that if some of them take other jobs and go do other things, how do we fill those spots?
My stance is, let's let Boone worry about filling those spots. And if we want to have a conversation with Boone about the possibility of using some of our facilities to provide services, that's an entirely different conversation as I see it. But what I'm going to suggest, Wayne, is we don't have, based on what you're telling me, we don't have enough information to make a decision right now. I would ask that you guys go meet with staff and see, get a gauge of where we are so that we can have this full conversation before we make a final decision. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And I don't think that requires any action from us. We're just putting it back on you guys to figure out what it looks like. I'm going to be really, really hesitant for us to enter into something like this if you're not talking about us taking the people that we already know and have them provide the services. If it's going to be Boone's responsibility, let it be Boone's responsibility if we don't have that staff. It is where I think I am right now.
So would you anticipate after your meeting within a reasonable week or two that this will come back for us? Because wasn't there some discussion with the other, another county within the region because as to whether or not they were going to join? Because this is part of the, this is still part of the 2080 agreement, is it not? Or is
it, it would be a new 2080.
It would be a new 2080. And so there are still questions from what I understand and what Supervisor Sanders is saying that we want to make sure we have a good handle on before we actually sign that agreement.
Right.
Okay.
And I would anticipate, just because of the timeline, that we would be back next Tuesday with a recommendation.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item is discussion consideration of Resolution 1661, residential subdivision located at 53372 180th Street. Thank Gary, thanks for sitting through all this.
Thank you. And we're done and doing making an official announcement.
Yes, I sure can. I'd like to introduce you to Amelia Schoenemann. She's our new planning intern. Amelia, why don't you stand up real quick?
Hi.
We're very happy to have her, and she started yesterday, and we put her to work, and she's doing an awesome job. Okay, this is a residential parcel subdivision, case 03/16. The name of the proposed subdivision is Cardinal Creek. It's located at 53372 180th Street. The property owners are Michael R. Bird and Patricia J. Tromberg. Again, at the same address, Gilbert, Iowa. They're being represented by Victoria Fehlmeyer, Nymaster Good Law Office in Ames. This is probably the most important slide that I've got for you today. It gives you a snapshot of what's going on in this particular area. We're going to try to give you the background of what's going on in this particular area, what our current Story County development regulations require for residential subdivisions. It's also in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, so we're going to give you some information about there, give you all the facts to help you with your decision this morning. So, again, this is located between the cities of Gilbert. It's about a half a mile southeast of Gilbert. It's about a three-quarters of a mile northeast of the city of Ames. As I mentioned, it's in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. We'll go into that in a little more detail. Subject property is outlined for you. It's a little over 38 acres. The red dots represent existing dwellings on existing parcels, and there's about nine of those within three-quarters of a mile of what we're calling the subject property. The yellow dots represent parcels where the county could, if the property owner requested a zoning permit for a new dwelling to locate on those properties. So there's six of those total. Potentially, there could be 15 houses within this three-quarter of a mile area. Proximity-wise, to the north, we've got a 39-acre parcel. To the east, it's a 29-acre parcel, which is a part of an outlot to Spruce Ridge, which that was part of a residential parcel subdivision that was before the Board of Supervisors. I'm going to go into some detail on that. That was in 2014. To the south is a 40-acre agricultural parcel, and then to the west, a 36-acre agricultural parcel. Closer view of the property, again, it's 38.69 acres. There is an existing dwelling located in the south central portion that was constructed in 1996. There's an accessory structure off to the northeast. The area that encompasses the drive, the house, the green space to the west, east, north, and south is about a 7-8 acre area. There's a creek and drainage area that extends or meanders through the northern portion or the north one-third. Much of that area on the north side of the creek has been in grassland for the most part. The property owner has planted all those trees that you see in the northwest portion on the west and south side of the house. They acquired the property in about 2003. So the northwest corner is the proposed new lot. I've got a plat.
That's where the arrow is pointing, right? In that grassy area? Mean?
Correct. In the northwest portion of the site, it's about going to be about a 3.5-acre parcel for a proposed new single-family dwelling for a family member. So the area south of the house consists of about 20 acres of agricultural row crops. That use of that land will continue. So to break it down percentage-wise, about 21% of this parcel consists of the dwelling, the surrounding land, 27 acres on the north side in grassland, and then about 52% is agricultural row crops. And again, that use will continue.
But we'd be eating into the 27% of the grassland.
Correct. A little bit of history. July 2, 2002, planning staff did do some property research at a request of a previous property owner to determine whether or not the property could be divided. And it was the land evaluation and site assessment that we did. The numbers came back high, meaning that the soil qualities, characteristics were high enough that it really should not be divided for a single-family dwelling. Well, in May of 2012, the land development regulations were amended to allow for some flexibility to allow rural residential parcel subdivisions, such as what's being requested, to occur. Intent-wise, you know, we're looking at parcels that have been taken out of agricultural production or agricultural use, but I can tell you as a practice, there's been some that have occurred on areas where it's been active agricultural use.
So this has nothing to do with the change that we talked about, like the 35-acre minimum?
Yeah, well, that was, so back in 2012, Wayne, we referred this to our planning staff and the Planning and Zoning Commission to take a look at that 35-acre minimum, and one of the proposals they came back with was a mechanism to allow just
allow
this.
More flexibility, right. To allow future divisions such as this. So the property to the east, which is just directly east of the where the subject property is, there was a case similar to what's being requested today. It was May 6, 2014. It was the Leon Wubker property, and it was a residential parcel subdivision called Spruce Ridge. Contained a 3.81-acre parcel with an existing dwelling and then a new proposed parcel, which is currently vacant today. It was about a 1.38-acre proposed parcel for a new single-family dwelling. Property also is located in the Ames Urban Fringe area, also in the Rural Service and Ag Conservation area, and then in the subcategory of Agricultural and Farm Service. So it's an apples-to-apples comparison. We reviewed the staff recommendation. It did indicate that it was in the Ames Urban Fringe. Didn't really go into policy, which I'm going to share some of that information with you this morning. But that one was approved by the Board of Supervisors. We received a resolution from the City of Gilbert at that time waiving their right to review it. Nothing from the City of Ames. And in talking with the staff, we don't think that they sent anything with regard to this anyway, because in these rural areas, it's in the 20E agreement that they waive their right anyway.
Right.
So this shows you the map. It's the land use framework map, Ames Urban Fringe Plan. Subject property is shown where that red dot is. Again, we're in the Rural Service and Agricultural Conservation Area, subcategory Ag and Farm Service. So Ames Urban Fringe Plan was adopted in 2006. It involves the City of Gilbert, City of Ames, and Story County. It's the vision for through 2030, and it addresses the proposed land use in that area, how to deal with proposed development submittals, and then how to deal with amendments that might occur within that 2-mile area. The The property is also located within the Story County study area, which is identified in this document. It's an area that's between 180th and 190th Street. I think there was some initial work done on it. Nothing was completed. However, there's a statement in there that says the county and both cities were to retain their jurisdictional powers in this area and maintain a status quo regarding land use, zoning, and subdivision until a joint decision was made for the area.
So what does that really mean?
It meant it was a DMZ. It meant that Gilbert wasn't going to extend into there, Ames wasn't going to extend in there, and the county was not going to allow any full-on subdivisions in that area. It just never got codified.
Right. Nothing happened. It's something that still should, in my view, occur. It's in the 2016.
Well, especially now with us paving Grant Breton and 530th, whatever you want to call it, this is going to become a major topic of conversation among developers. We better get out ahead of this.
Right, and it's getting to be prime, too, because the city of Ames is looking at updating their comprehensive plan, and this will likely be a part of that review. So some of the highlights of the actual plan, these are some of the policies. They're not all of the policies. We've selected four, and I'm going to talk about two of these highlighted in yellow. The first policy talks about the importance of maintaining farming and agricultural production as a predominant characteristic of the rural service and agricultural conservation area. Four, permit agricultural, farmstead, and strategically located rural residential development. I think you could make a case that this application is similar to that.
Right.
To use well water or other water systems. It's in the rural water area, Xenia, in conformance with the standards of the Iowa DNR. Breakdown of the ag and farm service policies. Again, what's highlighted is it says recognizing that ag land is a natural resource of the Ames Urban Fringe that should be protected. Farming and ag production is and will continue to be the prominent land use of areas given the ag and farm service designation. Again, 52% of this parcel will stay in agricultural production. Four is an issue, though. Initially, it was both cited by the cities of Gilbert and the city of Ames. It says limit non-agricultural residences in the agricultural and farm service designation to homes existing at the time of this plan or remaining scattered building sites where farmstead homes once existed. Or homes on very large parcels. Again, typically you're looking at a 35-acre standard, which is likely what that references. It says, otherwise, subdivisions for the creation of new residential development lots is not supported within the ag and farm service designation. County zoning, again, outlined for you, subject property, it's surrounded by A1 agricultural district. This property does have floodplain going through it. The blue represents the limits of the floodplain. Again, there's a creek that meanders through. So we're primarily looking at the north one-third area where that floodplain is. This is the plat. Again, it would be a two-lot subdivision plat. Lot one, which would be the largest, it would contain the existing single-family dwelling. It would be a little over 35 acres. The proposed new lot would be 3.5 acres, and it would contain the proposed single-family home for the family member. We're into the site photos. This is the existing dwelling. We're looking down the paved drive to the residence. We're going to be panning to the west. This is the location for the proposed new lot.
Basically, the tree line is the floodplain. Is that right?
Part of it. The front of the house, looking back to 180th Street, you see some of the trees that have been planted, numerous trees. Looking at the proposed new lot from the road this time, we're looking to the south. We're going to be panning to the southwest. Now we're into the Story County Land Development Regulations. It says a subdivision may be submitted for review and approval as a residential parcel subdivision plat when all of the following are true. I'm not going to go through all of those. There's nine things. I've highlighted some of the important ones. First thing says the development lots created by the subdivision are intended to be used for residential purposes. They are. Only two development lots may be created. That's the case here. The assessment property card for the property shall show a single family dwelling and or farmstead, which there is an existing dwelling. Five, the subdivision lies wholly within the A1 district for parcels located within the boundaries of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, must be both zoned A1 agricultural and lie wholly within the rural service and agricultural conservation designation. That's all it says, and it meets that requirement. With regard to public input, we did send notices to all the landowners within a quarter of a mile of the property, April 26th. Didn't receive anything in writing, but we did receive a verbal comment on the 9th of May from the adjacent property owner to the east, Mr. Wubiker. As I mentioned, the City of Ames and the City of Gilbert both did provide email responses stating that they didn't think that it met primarily that policy number 4 about creating new lots through subdivision. I did have a conversation with the city clerk from Gilbert, and she stated that initially they thought this was going to be a much larger proposed development than what is being requested. The city council did on the 2nd take action by motion. They did send us a letter with regard to their unanimous support of this project. So in summary, a few items to consider to help you with your decision. The submittal does meet the county's requirements with regard to the submittal requirements. The north third of the property has the meandering creek and floodplain. There's about a 4-acre, a little larger if you go outside. It expands out to about a 7-acre area with the dwelling, accessory structure, driveway, and grassy area. One residential lot will be created in the northwest area of the property. Some of that grassland will be removed. There's still going to be probably 5 to 6 acres of grassland. The south 20 acres will continue to be farmed. It's important, too, to look at what's going on in this area. You've got 9 existing single-family homes within a 3/4 mile area. There's potential to add 6 more. And this would be, we would do this on our own under the guidelines of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. We would have that authority to issue permits if somebody wanted to build a single family home. And these are parcels that have 35 acres or greater. So potentially there could be 15, not including this project.
Now, even though the potential is to do that for those other properties, one of the interesting parts here is this is for family members. Is there any stipulation on any of the other 5 or 6, just like it sounds to the president, that it has to be family members? If the maximum is 2, it possibly could fit within the requirements.
Yeah, what I'm speaking of is parcels that are out there within that 3/4 mile that are 35 acres or greater. We would be required to issue that permit because it would meet our minimum requirement.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
And then, again, on the 6th of 2014, the Board of Supervisors did look at the Spruce Ridge Residential Parcel Subdivision, did approve that one.
And I would say that's very similar to this one.
It's a good comparison.
Yeah.
It's in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. While there is strong support of preserving agricultural farm ground, it does also talk about rural residential development. We talked several times about the existing conditions. Again, the City of Gilbert did approve by unanimous motion this project. And then, as I mentioned, our work program, this is something that we're supposed to be working on with the cities of Gilbert, with the city of Ames, in fine-tuning the land use in this area. So based on all of those things, planning staff thinks that this is something that can be approved, which would be item 1. And with that, I'd be happy to answer questions. As I mentioned, the property owners are here, too, if you have questions for them.
You know what comes to mind is that our goal and our stated objective have always talked about preservation of prime ag land. I'm reminded of the fact when I came to Ames in 1966, north of 24th Street, and further west is mostly all dairy farms. So over a period of time, the growth pattern and the desire for expansion as the population changes causes you to reevaluate and take a look at. And yet, the idea of zoning is to allow for an orderly type of zoning or development that is consistent, and I think that's what we basically try to do. So I'm always concerned when I hear people basically say, well, you know, your policy says you can't do anything because you're taking prime ag land. So I think we have to always try to keep that in mind, that over time, the conditions, the circumstances somewhat address, but the fact that the majority of this land is still going to be ag production, we're really talking about a very small segment of land here. And so I guess my comfort level is very good in the process that we kind of have in place now and the mechanism that we use to determine whether we approve the permit for these types of developments.
Well, I think you're dead on. I think this one, by our policy and our past practice, 2 years ago past practice, this one is approvable and should be approved. And then we need to have a conversation about what this whole area looks like. So I'll leave it to you if you want to make that motion.
Yeah, I would move approval of resolution 1661, the residential subdivision at 53372 180th Street as presented.
Yeah, I'll second. Further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Jerry, direction for you. We need to get with the city of Gilbert and the city of Ames as soon as possible to talk about this entire area between, in my mind, it's between George Washington Carver and 69 and 190th Street all the way to the Gilbert city limits, because a lot of factors are playing into it, but Darren Moon's going to get in there and pave that road in a year or so, and that runs north between George Washington Carver and 69, and that can be impactful with what happens here. And I think the three entities, us and Ames and Gilbert, better have some understanding of how we're going to deal with these things and how it impacts this entire area, according to the branch plan.
We hear you loud and clear.
Okay, thanks. Do we need to have you bring something back to the board in a week or so for us to formally request that we open up that area? Will you look into that and just make a decision?
It's already on a work program.
Okay.
So, I mean, if you want to do something in addition to that, we certainly can.
But just think through the right way for us to start and have this conversation, and let's have it sooner rather than later.
Okay. Thank you.
No other reports. Public forum number two, opportunities for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. The board may not take any action to your meetings all, but we may do so in the future. Anybody wish to address the board? Seeing no one moving, liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Wayne?
Just very quickly, I did meet with Carla yesterday, and we pretty much discussed what she shared in her report. And one other discussion is that I did follow her email from John Miller from Waterloo, Blackhawk County, regarding the NACO Step It Up initiative. And I think I followed to Deb and you as well, because that is directly going to be tied to what we do in the jails with mental health issues, jail diversion issues, and things of this nature. And we are trying to look at best practices that other counties are using, and also what is best practices in and around the nation. And then we also talked about trying to determine who will actually take over to lead that program in the jail as of July 1st and working in cooperation with OptumAid and so forth. So
outstanding. Thanks, Wayne. I don't have anything. Yeah. Announcements, Supervisor Wayne.
Pass.
All right. Services for Paul Toot. Visitation will be Wednesday night from 4 to 8 p.m. County's not going to take any formal action there. But then Thursday morning, Story County will close to the public from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Any county employee wishing to attend service for Paul Toot clearly may do so. Any employee that does not choose to attend can sure stay behind and work in a quiet situation. But all county facilities will be closed, or all county operations will be closed to the public. Austin, I'd appreciate if you would really get that. I don't want people showing up at the door expecting to be served during that time. At 9:30 a.m. over at the Justice Center, there will be a full law enforcement honors, including a 21-gun salute. And I know Wayne and I will both say a few words there. And then from there will be a procession of law enforcement and anybody who chooses to be part of the procession over to the Catholic Church, where the full funeral will begin at 10:30. And then, like I said, then Story County will reopen for business at 1 p.m. We lost a great, great man, and somebody that Wayne and I both rely on greatly, in addition to counting as a great friend. And we all owe it to Paul Toot to recognize that he spent his entire adult life trying to make Story County a better place. And if each of us come to work every day trying to match that, then we're honoring him in the right way. With that, I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned. Yep.